do, ladies and gentlemen of the world. This is Hollywood. Tonight, the Canadian Red Cross, in association with the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation and the Mutual Network of the United States, appeals again to the people of Canada and the world who have given so generously, so wholeheartedly in the past. Assembled here in one of the huge Warner Brothers sound stages before an audience of 3,000 people are many leading Canadian and British motion picture stars who are contributing their entertainment. But first, we take you to Ottawa, the capital city of Canada, for a message from the Prime Minister, the Right Honorable W.L. Mackenzie King, who has graciously consented to officially open this gala broadcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, the Canadian Red Cross Society is appealing for $5 million to help Canadian and British men, women, and children in the hours of their greatest need. Assisting the Society in its appeal, Canadian and British artists, whose names are among the greatest in the entertainment world, are making a free will offering of their exceptional gifts. Their voices will be heard in song, in mirth, and in drama. You will also hear, in the concert to which you will be privileged to listen, the voices of the five little girls whose lives from the day of their birth have been a center of interest to millions of kind-hearted people and a special care of the state. The world-famous men and women who are bringing for your inspiration and enjoyment the gifts with which they have been blessed are placing their talents on the altar of our common humanity with the spontaneous generosity which is typical of the great profession to which they belong. To them, I offer, in the name of the people of Canada, a nation's thanks. To our little friends at Callender and to Dr. Defoe, I also send the grateful good wishes of us all. As we listen in the quiet of this Sunday hour to the voices of the great actors, famous musicians, and happy children who will sing or speak or play for us, I should like you to think especially of the sorrowing and suffering ones on whose behalf their individual contributions are being made. I should like each one of you to ask yourself, to what extent can I also immediately contribute to the fund of the Red Cross in order that its voice may be heard in fuller and deeper tones amid the cruelties and anguish of war? The voice of the Red Cross is the voice of humanity. It calls to us tonight from scenes of unparalleled horror and unprecedented tragedy. It is to be heard amidst the devastation of ancient monuments and humble homes, and from the waves of the storm-swept sea. It is the voice of our bravest sons and daughters, and of their kinsmen and allies beyond the seas, who lie wounded, crippled, dying, in order that we may live. It is the voice not only of brave men prepared to meet death and to suffer agonies and privations for us, but also the voice of women and little children appealing to God for rescue from the barbarities of a foe who has substituted a deity of iron and hate for the source of light and love in the human heart. Tonight, amidst man's inhumanity to man, the voice of the Red Cross pleads the cause of man's humanity to man. It is the voice of compassion, of pity, of loving kindness, of Christ-like ministration. Its work unites into one great community of mercy, all creeds, all classes, all races. Under its banner, doctors and nurses brave pestilence and death. Beneath the sign of its holy symbol, men and women comfort the afflicted, welcome the refugee, feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, tend the sick, aid the wounded, and bring hope to the dying. It is this great humanitarian service which at this time we are being called upon to aid. Our own hearts will need much in the way of consolation before this terrible and ever-widening conflict is at an end. in what we ourselves have done to lessen its sacrifices and to assuage its sorrows will lie the only real consolation we shall ever have. Ladies and gentlemen, many voices appeal to you tonight. Strongest, perhaps, is the voice of conscience, the celestial and immortal voice, it has been called. Of your generous response to the eloquent appeal of these many voices, I am not the least in doubt.
You have heard the opening message from the Prime Minister of Canada, the Right Honorable W.L. Mackenzie King.
Hello, Canada. This is Alan Mowbray speaking from Hollywood and sending greetings to all of you from all of us. Hello, Canada. Voici Alan Mowbray, qui vous parle de Hollywood et qui vous envoie les félicitations de tout le monde ici aux voisins du Canada. On this program will be heard the Dean Quintuplets, Marie, Yvonne, Cecile, Emily, Annette with Dr. Alan Ray Defoe. Also, Binny Barnes, Freddie Bartholomew, Madeline Carroll, Ronald Coleman, Reginald Gardner, Maxine Gray, Sir Cedric Hardwick, Gloria Jean, Jean Lockhart, June Lockhart, Vivian Lee, Laurence Olivier, Herbert Marshall, Anna Neagle, Anne Jamison, Merle Oberon, Mary Pickford, Betty Jane Rhodes, George Saunders, C. Aubrey Smith, and the musical director, Dave Rose. And Alan Mowbray is your master of ceremonies. I will begin our part of this program with the story of a Britisher who was here in Hollywood. He was a good aviator, but he needed funds to return to England. So he wrote a song and sold that song for Gloria Jean's new picture. And with the money he received, he went back to England and is now flying with the Royal Air Force. His name, Vivian Ellis. His song, What Did We Learn in School?, will now be sung by Gloria Jean, assisted as she was in the picture by the Meglin Kiddies and Charles Previn's orchestra. The guest conductor for that number was Mr. Charles Previn. And now, Reginald Gardner. Some think him mad, some are quite sure of the fact. Any man who is convinced that he is a railroad train is, in the words of Hollywood, nuts. Reginald Gardner.
Ladies and gentlemen, when any one of you has been ill, when you're lying in bed, you look around your bedroom, you'll notice all kinds of objects that you've lived with all your life, but just because you're ill, they all assume terrifying and jeering shapes. For instance, you've probably got a flowered border around the top of your wallpaper, which goes like this. All around the wall, and you suddenly find one bit that goes, and you don't know why. That merely goes to point out that all these inanimate objects are actually alive. Now, the most alive thing I've ever seen is a railroad engine. Not only is it alive, but it's livid, furious, it loathes humanity. And in direct contrast, of course, we have a ship, which is a sweet thing, proud and wonderful, but an engine, no. And the only man who isn't afraid of it, I can't think why, is the engineer, who, when he gets the signal to go, he pulls down a handle, and this livid beast is unleashed. Like this. Ah. and so forth on its journey. Well, now that we've unleashed this livid thing, we find it still equally furious, and it has a colossal argument with the rails it's running on. Like this, diddle-a-dock, diddle-a-dock, diddle-a-dee, diddle-a-dock, diddle-a-dock, diddle-a-dee, diddle-a-dock, diddle-a-dock, diddle-a-dee, diddle-a-dock, diddle-a-dock. That goes on the entire journey. And not only does it have a colossal argument with the rails it's running on, but also all the other rails when they dare to cross its own. Like this, diddle-a-dock, diddle-a-dock, diddle-a-dee, diddle-a-dock, diddle-a-dee, and so on. I'm not a much-traveled man, but I'm told this goes on all over the world in all the different railways. For instance, exactly the same thing takes place in France, only, of course, the language is a little different. It's all very much the same thing. And speaking of France, the first time I ever went there, I arrived at Calais, and as soon as I got off the boat, I got my first glimpse of a French engine. I cowered away from this enormous beast. It was much bigger than any engine I'd ever seen before, and it seemed to me to be so terrifically masculine, and yet as it started on its journey for Paris, all it managed to summon up was... which seems a little ridiculous to me. Well, now, by way of ending this nonsense, I'd like to tell you the one thing that an engine loathes more than anything else, and that is another engine coming in the opposite direction. You've probably settled down quite calmly, having got used to diddle-a-dom, diddle-a-dom, and all the other horrid noises, when suddenly this furious thing bursts upon you, nearly knocks you on the carriage floor, and it goes like this. Diddle-a-dom, diddle-a-dee, diddle-a-dom, diddle-a-dom, zzzz-ya! Diddle-a-dom, diddle-a-dee, but it's very silly. It's nothing to do with that.
May I introduce the charming lady who played the role of one of Britain's greatest nurses, the martyred Edith Cavell, Miss Anna Neagle, in this prayer of the Red Cross nurse.
Dear Lord, let me have these things from all men, for all men. Let me have compassion. And let pity be made of more than words. Let me have charity, not for myself, but that I may help others. Let me have strength, that my arm may not tire. Let me have love, a great store of love, that I may share it. Let me have love. Let men understand these truths, dear Lord, for this is the prayer of the Red Cross nurse. Give. Please give your contribution to the Canadian Red Cross.
Thank you, Anna Needle. May I urge all Canadians to send their contributions direct to the Canadian Red Cross, Toronto, Ontario. And to any friends in the United States who wish to help this worthy cause, will you send your contributions to Alan Mowbray, British War Relief, Ambassador Hotel, Los Angeles, California. And we will forward it to you with the Canadian Red Cross. The Western Union have graciously consented to cooperate by collecting and delivering all contributions at greatly reduced rates. One of musical England's best moderns is Ray Noble. Two of his fine songs, Good Night, Sweetheart, and The Very Thought of You, are sung now by Maxine Gray with the Donnelly Orchestra, directed by Dave Rowe.
Good night, sweetheart, till we meet tomorrow. Good night, sweetheart, sleep with any sorrow. Tears and parting may come along, but with the dawn sweetheart, though I'm not beside you. Good night, sweetheart, till my love will guide you. Dreams enfold you, in each one I'll hold you. Good night, sweetheart, good night. A little ordinary thing that everyone ought to do. love will guide you. Dreams enfold you. In each one I'll hold you. Good luck, sweetheart. I will hold you tight tonight.
There is an orchestra directed by Dave Rose, about to play the Westminster Movement from the London Suite. There is a town, London. There is a man, about to reminisce of London, portrayed by Mr. Herbert Marshall.
London, as I know it, as I so often dream of it, of its people, of the good men and women I know, of the places I've lived in, of all the tangled skein of streets and of mews and of alleys and the ladder of bridges. I think of the heart of London, Whitehall, Nelson's column pointing to the skies. I gaze along the Mall, to the palace in the distance. I turn to the Strand, then down to the Thames. Against the sky, in the distance, is the dome of St. Paul's. St. Paul's. I think of the thousand and a thousand heroes of all the important things on earth. The men and women who are the legends of the town. Whittington, Chaucer, Arthur, Henry, Elizabeth, Mary, Raleigh, Essex, Moore, Marlowe, Byron, Shakespeare, Dickens, De Quincey, Disraeli, Gladstone. London. When a man is tired of London, he is tired of life. For there is in London all that is precious in life. Thames glides at its own sweet will, a thing as steadfast as the scene, the accompaniment, the still music of humanity. She seems to say, come one, come all, this rock shall fly from its firm base as soon as I... Long, long may it be, ere the sun of thy glory sink beneath the wave of darkness. Though gloomy and portentous clouds are gathering around thee, still may it please the Almighty to disperse them, and to grant thee a futurity longer in duration and brighter in renown than thy past.
May I introduce that very well-beloved lady of Hollywood, native daughter of Canada, Miss Mary Pickford.
Across the thousands of miles that separate us here in Hollywood from the screaming, roaring holocaust of war in Europe, one tiny sound comes to my ears, bringing back again and again the words of one of Britain's greatest women, Elizabeth Barrett Browning. Do you hear the children weeping, O my brother, ere the sorrow comes with years? I have seen the little children of England. I've seen them as they climbed, bewildered from the ships that brought them from a nightmare of bombs and cannon and dying men into a dream of hope on our shores and in our homes. Theirs were not the tears of fright, for innocence is not timid or afraid. But their little hearts cried out in the anguish of confusion, loneliness, and the need of strong spiritual support. And I've seen the Red Cross, the Canadian Red Cross, and the mothers of this continent working diligently to rebuild these young lives, to establish for them thoughts of peace and security. We all have given much to help the Red Cross in its work, but what we have given is not enough. The scope of its work is constantly growing, and we must open our hearts to those who need our help and our friendship. You people in Canada and the far-reaching arms of the Empire, you must be willing to let your generosity and your love grow to match the sacrifice your brothers are making and the work the Red Cross is doing. Contact your local Red Cross or British War Relief headquarters and tell them that you want to help more than you have helped. Tell them you especially want to open your heart to the future citizens of your empire. In the spirit of him who said, suffer the little children to come unto me.
Thank you, Miss Mary Pickford. Thank you. Londonderry Air is known around the world under a dozen different names. The favorite lyrics, I think, are those of Danny Boy, sung tonight by Betty Jane Rowe.
The pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the roses falling. It's you must go and I must die. But come ye back when summer's in the meadow, or when the valley's hushed and white with snow. If I'll be here in sunshine or in shadow, oh Danny boy, oh Danny boy, I love you so. If I'll be here in sunshine or in shadow. Oh, Danny boy, oh, Danny boy.
Ladies, 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 the Dion Quintuplet, Emily, Annette, Marie, Yvonne, Cecile. Ladies and gentlemen of the world, it is a most particular and precious privilege to introduce the Dion Quintuplet and their best friend, Dr. Alan Roy Defoe. We take you to Callander, Ontario.
Greetings from Quintuplet Land. Here in the Quint's Nursery are the five illustrious little ladies and their famous physician, Dr. Alan Roy Defoe. Before introducing the children, Dr. Defoe has a word for you. Dr. Defoe.
Ladies and gentlemen, we here in the nursery are very proud to associate with those taking part in helping the Canadian Red Cross and their worthy cause. And I feel as a doctor it is my duty to thank the artists in Hollywood for their generous contributions of time and talent to the Red Cross, who, as we all know so well, are not dictated by boundaries, creed or time in helping mankind in the hour of his need. Here in the North over 6 years ago, when five little girls came into the world, their first visitor was a Red Cross nurse. And for the first year, two Red Cross nurses watched over them day and night to see that their every need was answered. Their assistance was invaluable. And there are many more incidents in connection with the Red Cross which have happened here in the North, which I would like to tell you about. But time will not permit. And now that this world of ours is full of strife again, the Red Cross call is to you and I to help. Details I know are not necessary. We are all familiar with the facts. Action, I think, best expresses the problem at hand. Now, as a contribution to this program here, are the Quints to sing a medley for you. Well, Mr. Wicklund, it's about time for you to take over now, and time for the quintuplets to go to their bed, but not with cotton in their ears or anxious nurses watching for bombers overhead. Theirs will be a sound sleep, for no bombs will be dropped here tonight. Let's keep it that way. Good night.
I present Mr. Ronald Coleman. To Britain, thou hast powers that will work for thee, air, earth, and skies. There's not a breathing of the common wind that will forget thee. Thou hast great allies. Thy friends are exaltations, agonies, and love, and man's unconquerable mind.
This program, an appeal for the Canadian Red Cross, is heard over the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. The Associated Broadcasting Stations of Southern California and the coast-to-coast network of the Mutual Broadcasting System.
This is the Canadian Red Cross emergency appeal coming to you from Hollywood, where many stars, members of the British and Canadian cinema colony, are entertaining you. I want you to hear a beautiful voice, that of the Canadian opera star, Miss Anne Jamison, who sings The Lass with a Delicate Air. This is the Canadian Red Cross emergency appeal coming to you from Hollywood, where many stars, members of the British and Canadian cinema colony, are entertaining you. I want you to hear a beautiful voice, that of the Canadian opera star, Miss Anne Jamison, who sings The Lass with a Delicate Air.
With ample of fire.
And now, Miss Madeline Carroll.
My mother, who at this moment, like countless other British citizens, is gallantly fighting the Battle of Britain from a damp little air raid shelter somewhere in Kent, always used to say to me, Madeline, before asking for things, always thank for what you have already received. That's not a difficult thing for me to do tonight, for my heart is very deeply moved by what the American people have already done for Britain. And for the fact that the giving has been done out of understanding rather than out of charity. What America thinks is deeply personal to me because I've worked side by side with American young people and have learned to know and appreciate them. And what, deep down in their hearts, they feel about England is, I think, very truly expressed in an editorial which appeared recently in the New York Times. As you hear it, I think you will read into it, as I did, complete understanding of what the people of Britain are really fighting for. A way of life which is also yours. It was written this July when Hitler decreed total destruction for England and Lord Halifax answered that England would defend herself. It is called 12 o'clock. It is 12 o'clock in London. Hitler has spoken and Lord Halifax has replied. There is no more to be said. Or is there? Is the tongue of Chaucer, of Shakespeare, of Milton, of the King James translation of the scriptures, of Keats, of Shelley, to be hereafter in the British Isles, the dialect of an enslaved race? Let us try to see clearly. We have to look back a good many centuries to find the beginnings of English liberty. We see it as a rough and obstinate growth, heaving the rich soil under the oaks of lordly estates, breaking out in Wat Tyler's time and in Cromwell's and in the day of the second James, forcing through the Reform Act, never perfected, never giving up. We see the spread of democracy and of empire side by side, confused and turbulent, but we see democracy ever marching on. It is 12 o'clock in London. Not 12 o'clock for the old dominion over palm and pine. 12 o'clock for the common people of England, out of whom England's greatest souls have always come. 12 o'clock for all that they are and have been, for all those things which make life worth living for free men. 12 o'clock. And the wisest prophet in Christendom cannot say what is to come. The old, old towns of Britain, the hills and cliffs and shores and meadows rich with history, the homes and lives of 45 million people, the great British traditions of human worth and dignity, the folk sayings, the deep wisdom and long-suffering hopes of a race, these, not being pleasing to Hitler, are condemned. We know little, and for a time shall know little of this unparalleled spectacle of the nation rising as by a single impulse to defend this blessed plot, this earth, this realm, this England. From our own shores, we cannot see the shadow over ancient gardens, over houses hoary with age, over the graves of poets and philosophers and the tombs of the martyrs. We know only that one of the green and lovely oases of civilization in the wilderness of man's time on earth is foully threatened, and that the whole world forevermore will be poorer if it falls. Words falter. There are no phrases for the obscene ambition that attacks, for the magnificent mobilization of a people that defends, unshaken and unafraid. We can only pray that soon the time will come when the vultures no longer defile the British skies, and the cry goes out from John O'Groats to Land's End,
12 o'clock, and all's well.
Europe in Arms. In England today, the great city of London is locked in a death struggle. The jaws of the bulldog are sunk deep in the throat of aggression. And as the struggle goes on, the inhabitants of London face, unflinchingly, the most violent onslaught known in the history of the human race. We present a story of London today entitled This Other Eden, written by Gene Lockhart. The characters as they appear are an air raid warden played by Gene Lockhart, Mr. Boggs by Sir Cedric Hardwicke, Mrs. Boggs by Miss Binny Barnes, Mr. Mannering by George Saunders, Alan Barclay by Freddie Bartholomew, and his younger sister Marjorie played by June Lockhart. The scene is a section of an underground shelter during an air raid. Mr. and Mrs. Boggs are just entering the shelter.
Here we are, Mr. Boggs.
Thank you, Warden. Hurry up, Matilda.
What for?
Yes, you'll get what for if you don't.
Mind the step. Down you go.
Here we are, old girl. Sit down and rest yourself.
Have you got the tea things, Herbert?
Yes, here they are.
Put them in the corner.
Right, there you are. Hope you didn't forget the sugar this time.
Of course I didn't. You got your newspaper?
Yes, here it is.
Now, isn't that nice? We're all comfy. Well, I do like getting down here first, don't you? You get a much better seat.
Much better seat. You talk as if you were seeing a show at the Palladium.
No, but we might as well be comfy. Now, where's my knitting?
It's underneath the teapot in the basket.
Oh, yeah. Here it is. Any news in the paper?
I'll have a look. Oh, that's bad.
What is it?
Bradshaw's out. Looks like Essex will win the match.
Oh, you and your cricket. What else?
Well, there's an article here about what we are fighting for, and it's the future of democracy, and it's at stake, see?
What for?
What do you mean, what for? So people like you and me can be free, see?
Yeah, I see.
So a man like me can do what he likes, see? So I can come home when I like, see? And go to the pub when I like, see?
I see. And can I come home when I like?
That's different. That's entirely different.
Can I tell you when to get your own supper when I like?
That's got nothing to do with it. I'm talking about democracy, not about getting married.
Yeah. I thought there was a catch in it someplace.
A man's home is his castle. He's lord of all he surveys.
Lord of all he surveys?
That's what I said.
That reminds me, did you pay the rent this morning?
Now, there's no need to be sarcastic.
Mind the step going down, please.
Oh, why, it's you, Mr. Mannering. Good afternoon, Mr. Mannering.
Oh, how are you, Mrs. Boggs? And Mr. Boggs?
Good day, sir.
You're quite late this time, aren't you?
Yes, I was attending a christening.
A christening? Well, what do you know? That's nice. I see you brought your book again with you.
Oh, yes.
Well, you ought to be able to finish it in a couple of more raids. That is, if they last long enough.
Matilda.
Oh, what's the name of it? Is it a mystery story?
No, it's called The Dignity of Man.
Oh. Well, that's nice, isn't it?
Shut up, Matilda. Let Mr. Mannering continue on with his reading.
Well, was that trying to be chatty, Herbert?
All right, you were. Now get on with your knitting.
In you go, youngsters. Mind your head.
Thank you, Warden. Come on, sis.
Take my hand, Alan.
There you are. Watch now. Two more steps down. There we are.
Oh, what a run. I'm out of breath.
Sit down here.
Thank you. I'm glad we don't have to stand this time.
So am I. Any chocolates left?
I think so. It's just two. Here you are.
Cure.
I wish they'd held off the raid until we saw how the picture finished.
Oh, that's quite simple. Robert Donat wins the girl.
I know. But I wanted to see him win her.
No, it's just as well you didn't. You're much too emotional.
Well, Mummy says girls are made that way and we can't help it. Oh, Alan.
What's the matter?
Look at that man over there.
Which one?
The one reading the book. He must have been in a hurry to get here.
How do you know?
He's got his collar on back to front.
Shh. He's a clergyman.
Oh.
I think I'll speak to him.
Oh, you wouldn't.
Why not?
Well, it isn't done.
Oh, you're worse than Mother. Times have changed, my girl. That is, for boys they have. We can speak up now. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Nice, clear weather, sir.
Yes, I'm afraid it is.
We came into town to see a picture and got caught in the raid. My name's Alan Barclay, and this is my sister, Marjorie.
How do you do, sir?
How do you do? My name is Mannering.
I hope you don't mind my introducing myself. I was just telling my sister that times have changed. People can get to know each other now, and, All that sort of thing.
Yes, adversity has its good points. Oh, this is Mr. and Mrs. Boggs, Master and Miss Barclay.
Pleased to meet you, my lad. You too, miss.
How do you do, I'm sure.
How do you do?
How do you do, Mrs. Boggs?
Oh, I'm doing nicely, dearie, thank you, except for a touch of lumbago. I always get lumbago when I don't get me proper sleep. Not that I'm complaining, but you...
That's right, Matilda, that's right. Put a wet blanket on the old proceedings.
Well, I was only trying to be a chatty Herbert. You understand, don't you, dearie?
I understand, Mrs. Boggs.
Of course you do, bless your sweet face.
Alan, where do you live?
We live at Kew, sir. It isn't far from London.
No, I've often gone down to Kew.
Oh, have you, sir? Our home is just near the gardens.
Oh, sir, it's so lovely in lilac time. In lilac time, the perfume of the flowers comes right into our house.
That must be lovely, my dear.
Mr. Boggs, is that an afternoon paper you have there?
It is, my lad.
What is that headline, sir?
Here you are, see for yourself. Not very good news, I'm sorry to say.
Ah, who's putting a wet blanket on the party now?
That'll do, Matilda, that'll do.
Oh, I see, this is bad. Mr. Mannering, did you see this headline, sir?
About Bradshaw?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I did. It is a great pity.
What is it, Alan?
Why, it's Bradshaw. He's the best bat on the Sussex team, and he was bowled out for only 15 runs.
Oh, tosh. I thought it was something important.
Well, I like that. It is important, sis. But you just don't understand. Does she, Mr. Mannering?
Well, let's say it's relatively important. But Bradshaw never seemed to be able to cope with a googly.
A googly? What's a googly?
Oh, it's a slow ball, silly, with a hop on it. Isn't it, Mr. Mannering?
Yes, it was introduced by an Australian bowler some years ago. It caused us a lot of trouble.
Oh, you've taken... Mannering? Mannering? You aren't not out, Mannering.
I'm afraid they did call me that sometimes.
Oh, I see. Mr. Boggs, did you hear that?
Oh, I did that. Not out, Mannering. Oh, many's the time I've seen the Reverend Gentleman score a century and more.
Thank you, Boggs.
Oh, please, Mr. Mannering, could you give me a little advice about playing the game? Sort of a little tip?
Well, all I can tell you, Alan, about playing the game is to hit hard, score when you can, and never give up. Never give up.
Marjorie, stop it. I see what you mean, sir. Play the game, score when you can, and never give up.
Well, now, Yeah, Matilda, what about that tea?
It's just ready, Herbert.
Did you say tea, Mrs. Boggs?
She did that. My old Dutch always brings along the things to make a nice cup of tea with.
My Herbert must always have his tea.
My daddy's like that, too.
Here you are, Mr. Mannering. Help yourself to the milk and sugar.
Thank you, Mr. Boggs. It's very welcome.
Here's yours, kids.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much.
Is it strong enough, Herbie?
Yes, just right, old girl.
Marjorie and I were going to have tea at the picture theater, but we had to leave.
Well, what picture did you see?
It's called This Other Eden.
It was about Richard II in Lancaster.
Yes, we wanted to hear Richard's long speech.
But we had to come away.
You know, the one that starts, this royal throne of kings, this sceptred isle, this,
This earth of majesty.
This earth of majesty, this, I don't know it, really.
This earth of majesty, this seat of Mars. This other Eden, demi-paradise, this fortress built by nature for herself against infection and the hand of war. This happy breed of men, this little world, this precious stone set in a silver sea which serves it in the office of a wall, or as a moat defensive to a house, against the envy of less happier lands. This blessed plot, this earth, this realm, this England.
All clear!
Thank you, sir.
Blimey.
All clear! All clear! All clear, please, all clear. Mind the step coming up.
Right, old warden. Come along, Matilda.
Coming. Well, we've had a very nice time, ain't we?
Yes, indeed, Mrs. Boggs.
Goodbye, Mrs. Boggs. Goodbye, Mr. Boggs.
Goodbye.
Thank you for the tea, Mrs. Boggs.
Oh, you're welcome, Ducky. Drop in again sometime.
Hey, Boggs.
Hello.
That last big bomb got your house.
Here, what's that?
It's blown to bits.
Oh. Oh, dear. Oh,
There, now, Matilda. Why, it's a bit of luck if you only knew it. Now we don't have to pay no rent. Here, let's go and have a look. Goodbye, Mr. Mannering. See you here again tonight, I suppose.
Yes, I'll be coming along as usual.
That's right. Come along, Matilda. See you tonight, Warder.
Right.
Goodbye, Alan. Goodbye, Marjorie.
Goodbye, sir, and thank you.
Goodbye, sir.
See you later on, Warden.
Right, sir.
Well, what sort of a sister are you?
What do you mean?
Why, crying like that, blubbering like a little baby. You were afraid.
No, I wasn't. At least, in my mind, I wasn't. Oh, you just don't understand women.
I should say I don't. Come along, let's go home.
Alan, wait. You won't tell Mummy I cried, will you?
Well, not this time. Come along.
After every rainstorm, a rainbow appears. That's the philosophy and the title of this song by young Gloria Jean. Colliery in Hollywood, Mr. C. Aubrey Smith.
Rudyard Kipling's Ballad of the Clampherdown. It was our warship Clampherdown would sweep the channel clean. Wherefore she kept her hatches closed when the merry channel chops arose to save the bleached marine. She had one bow gun of 100 ton and a great stern gun beside. They dipped their noses deep in the sea. They racked their stays and their stanchions free in the wash of the wine-bit tide. It was our warship Clampherdown fell in with a cruiser, Light, that carried the dainty Hotchkiss gun and a pair of heels wherewith to run from the grip of the close-fought fight. She opened fire at 7 miles as you shoot at a bobbing cork. And once she fired, and twice she fired, then the bow gun drooped like a lily tired that lolls upon the stalk. Captain, the bow gun melts apace. The deck beams break below. 'Twere well to rest for an hour or twain and botch the shattered plates again. And he answered, make it so. She opened fire within the mile as she shoot at a flying duck. The great stern gunshots, fair and true, with the heave of the ship to the stainless blue. Then the great stern turret struck. Captain, the turret fills with steam. The V-pipes burst below. You can hear the hiss of the helpless ram. You can hear the shattered rammers jam. And he answered, turn and go. It was our warship Clampherdown, and grimly did she roll. Swung out to take the cruiser's fire, as the white whale faces the thresher's ire when they war at the frozen pole. Captain, they hack us through and through. Her chill teal bolts are swift. We've emptied our bunkers in open sea. Their shrapnel bursts where our coal should be. And he answered, "Let her drift." It was our warship Tamperdown swung round upon the tide. Her two dumb guns glared south and north. The blood and the bubbling steam ran forth as she ground the cruiser's side. "Captain," they cried, "the fight is done. They bid you yield your sword." But he answered, "Grapple her, stern and bow. They've asked for steel. They shall have it now. Out cutlasses and board." It was our warship Tamperdown spewed up 400 men. The scalded stokers yelped delight as they rolled in the waist and heard the fight stamp o'er their steel-walled pen. They cleared the cruiser end to end, from conning tower to hold. They fought as they fought in Nelson's fleet. They were stripped to the waist. They were bare to the feet, as it was in the days of old. It was the sinking Tamperdown heaved up her battered side and carried £1,000,000 in steel to the cod and the corpse fed conger eel and the scour of the channel tide. It was the crew of the Tamperdown stood out to sweep the sea on a cruiser won from a foreign foe, as it was in the days of long ago and as it still shall be.
You're listening to the Canadian Red Cross Emergency Appeal Broadcast, direct from Hollywood. This is Merle O'Brien speaking. A year has passed since the women of Canada began their great work on behalf of the fighting forces and the suffering civilian victims of war. The supplies that they have made are now pouring from the Canadian Red Cross warehouses in England, bringing comfort to thousands of innocent and helpless victims of air raids. 500,000 garments are needed for British refugees and evacuees. Woolen comforts must be supplied to our soldiers, sailors and airmen, particularly during the winter months. Hospital and surgical supplies must be provided for the sick and wounded. These mounting needs offer a challenge which Canadians have never failed to meet. It is your contribution, large or small, whatever you can give to meet this urgent appeal. It is your contribution that will help to purchase materials that will be used to keep supplies moving steadily to relieve suffering, to comfort those who are bearing the brunt of the attack.
May I once again urge all Canadians to send their contributions direct to the Canadian Red Cross in Toronto, Ontario. And to any friends in the United States who wish to help this worthy cause, send your contributions to Alan Mowbray, British War Relief, Ambassador Hotel, Los Angeles, California, and we will forward it for you direct to the Canadian Red Cross. The Western Union have graciously cooperated by offering to collect and deliver all contributions at greatly reduced rates. It was centuries ago when man began to capture the spirit of England in words. In Henry V, Shakespeare penned "Once More Unto the Breach." These lines, fitting for this day, are read by Mr. Laurence Olivier. In Cavalcade, Noel Coward closes his play with equally fitting lines to be read by Miss Vivian Lee.
It is August in the year 1415. The English force is ranged before the gates of Harfleur in France. As it has often been and is today, the English soldiers are outnumbered as they anxiously await the appearance and encouragement of their hero king, Harry V.
"Once more unto the breach, dear friends, once more, or close the wall up with our English dead. In peace, there's nothing so becomes a man as modest stillness and humility. But when the blast of war blows in our ears, then imitate the action of the tiger. Stiffen the sinews, summon up the blood, disguise fair nature with hard-favored rage. Then lend the eye a terrible aspect, let it pry through the fortage of the head like the brass cannon. Let the brow whelm it as fearfully as doth a galled rock, or hang and jutty his confounded face swilled with a wild and wasteful ocean. Now set the teeth and stretch the nostril wide. Hold hard the breath and bend up every spirit to his full height. On, you noblest English, whose blood is fed from fathers of war-proof. Fathers that, like so many Alexanders, have in these parts from morn till even fought, and sheathed their swords for lack of argument. Dishonor not your mothers. Now attest that those whom you called fathers did beget you. Be copy now to men of grosser blood and teach them how to war. And you, good yeomen, whose limbs were made in England, show us here the metal of your pasture. Let us swear that you are worth your breeding, which I doubt not, for there is none of you so mean and base that hath not noble luster in your eyes. I see you stand like greyhounds in the slips, training upon the start. The game's afoot. Follow your spirit. And upon this charge, cry God for Harry, England and St. George!
Let's couple the future of England with the past of England. The glories and victories and triumphs that are over, and the sorrows that are over, too. Let us drink to our sons who made part of the pattern, and to our hearts that died with them. Let's drink to the spirit of gallantry and courage that made a strange heaven out of unbelievable hell. And let us drink to the hope that one day this country of ours, which we love so much, will find dignity and greatness and peace again.
Thank you, Vivian Lee and Laurence Olivier. Now, men and women of the world, speaking for the Canadian Red Cross, reminded that the need is great. Let those who never gave before give now. Let those who always give now give the more. Your local chapter of the Canadian Red Cross will welcome your contribution. Please give. And now, a heartfelt thanks to all the great artists who've come here today. Many, many thanks. And to the radio men and women who chose to be anonymous. And one name I feel must be mentioned, that of Mr. C.P. McGregor, for his coordinating of this program between the United States and Canada. To you all, to the citizens of Canada, of Britain and the Empire, good night and God bless you. Within the confines of the British Empire, all programs close with the singing of the British National Anthem. It is fortunate for us who are in America that the British Anthem has also the same tune as America's My Country, 'Tis of Thee. If the people in Canada will sing their words and our friends in America will sing theirs, that is the symphony of friendship that we are trying to achieve.
Originated in Hollywood and was heard over the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, the Associated Broadcasting Stations of Southern California, and the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting Systems.